Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips, your Sunday morning community radio magazine, bringing communities and people together.
All right. With the first Sunday roundtable, and gentlemen, you can stop dancing now, please. Everybody likes our bumper music, you know? It's kind of, play a little bit more of it. The Metro Talk Orchestra. Thank you very much. They're union guys. We don't pay them that much. We don't pay them to play that long. You know what I mean? They can only play a few seconds there, you know, before the choir. He even has a choir in this darn thing. You know,
nice.
You know, isn't it nice? Play a little bit more there. Ah, yes.
Welcome to Club Metro Talk.
We're at a martini.
There you go. No, don't say that, please. Anyway, we get in trouble. All right, guys, look here. They're cleaning out the White House. George Bush, some people have said, it must be going berserk. He's cleaning out everybody, and Condoleezza Rice, poor Condoleezza, she has to take on all the states of the world. Now they got this new guy who is going to be directing the, Bernard Kirk, who's going to direct on the Homeland Security, and also Commerce, Education. What's going on, Jim Pomeroy, Republican?
Oh, it's called a new term. I mean, these are tough jobs, and people tend to, there's a lot of turnover at the end of 4 years. That's the way these things go, whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president. This is nothing unusual.
Do you think that the cabinet changes will make a difference, Mr. Sarwak, libertarian?
It seems pretty obvious that the president is taking advantage of everyone's sort of political high right after the re-election to...
You mean the country was drunk after the election?
to consolidate power around him with advisors that he trusts and sort of move people out of the cabinet who might have had more of a different picture of which direction the country should go. And he's doing it very rapidly before any sort of real opposition could be created to it.
Eric Mickelson.
Well, I think, you know, again, he's appointing people
Green Party.
To whom he owes some political favors to the cabinet positions. It's a bipartisan, policy generally. But if you look at important changes like the loss of Colin Powell and moving Condi Rice into that role, I think you will see some very significant changes from, say, the State Department and that sort of thing.
What kind of changes?
Well, to me, it just seems as though Dr. Rice. Well, I think that Dr. Rice is more in line with President Bush's thinking, and probably less likely to raise objections to his vision of the world. Whereas Colin Powell seemed like he would at least play devil's advocate and maybe advocate for a slightly different path.
Giuliani was considered for the job of the head of Homeland Security. On the phone with the president, he said, look out for my buddy Bernard Kirk, who was at that time the ex-official of New York City Police Department during 9/11. And they looked out for him. They gave him the job of Homeland Security.
Yes,
McKinney, Democrat.
They certainly did, Jerry. And, I find it interesting that this job of NYPD has become a stepping stone, really, for the administration. Bremer was also out of the NYPD and was plopped down in Iraq. He had no former international experience, and really, it's questionable how good a job he was able to do. We'll see what Kerik is able to do with his lack of experience in Washington.
Well, you know what they say about New York, Jerry. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, the Republicans have even coined that for us. I love it.
Running New York Police Department, that's a tough job. And I think if you can run that, I think you can run Homeland Security.
What about that, Nicholas Sawalk?
Honestly, Homeland Security is sort of the agency where politicians go to end their careers, not where they go to begin them. It's an agency that's not funded well. It's an agency that in the American mindset doesn't really fit the idea of a domestic security agency that's national and sort of all-encompassing is something that most Americans associate more with Germany or other countries where you have more of this papers, please mentality. And I think that that's part of the reason that over the last 4 years, the last 3 years, Tom Ridge hasn't been able to do much with it, is that it was the agency that was created, but no one really wanted to support it. Because it just feels wrong to the American people that we should have this internal agency kind of tracking everything and putting out color-coded alerts and whatnot.
It's 8:30 and it's going up to 58 degrees today with sunshine. This is Metro Talk from Clear Channel Communications, Clear Channel Radio here in Washington, WBIG, 100.3 FM and Sports Talk 980. I'm Jerry Phillips, along with our guests this morning, the first Sunday roundtable panelists. They are Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and Green Party, Eric Mickelson. Emily Loeffler, our independent, is off being independent today. Eric? McKinney.
Getting back to Homeland Security, Jerry, actually Homeland Security is extremely well-funded. Over the past 2 years, the funding's probably tripled. I think that what it needs is a good, strong administrator. It spends a lot of money. It's highly funded, but it's not really all that effective because, we don't really see the results. We've got pretty good airport security right now for passengers, but they're not.
We have terrible airport security for passengers.
You got to strip before you get on the airplane.
The airport security for passengers is an example of how Homeland Security runs, which is it does a lot of work to make people feel safe, but it does very little substantive to actually change the level of safety and security. And the issue is not so much the lack of money, which I'll agree with you. There is a lot of money going there. But the lack of a clear vision or a clear mandate for what Homeland Security should do and the lack of actual authority to do what Homeland Security should do. That position does not have the authority to make things happen that, say, the Attorney General does or the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of Commerce or any of the other cabinet positions have.
Jim, are you happy with the way that Homeland Security has become this cabinet post, has become this multi-government function now, taking in many different agencies?
Well, it seemed that that was sort of the bipartisan consensus after 9/11 that the Democrats and Republicans both wanted to put together this cabinet-level agency and different ways to put it together. But I'd like to ask Nick, what would you do if you were, we put you in charge for a day, what would you do differently?
Well, I would not consolidate a larger bureaucracy, thus creating more levels of management with which to try and filter important intelligence. The issue that we had on September 11th was not one that we didn't have intelligence that pointed in a certain direction. It was one that we had too much intelligence and we were gathering more than we could adequately process. And I don't think that creating another level of management
either
in Homeland Security or with the attempt to restructure the CIA will actually be effective to put yet another layer of filtering. We need to focus our efforts on the things that are truly important rather than trying to make things more all-encompassing and broad.
I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. My lines are open, my dear friends, here on Metro Talk as we talk about the first Sunday political debate issues, and already we've gotten into cabinet changes in the Bush administration. Let's localize a little bit, and my dear friend Eric Mickelson, I'm turning to you because we didn't have it on the list, but I did want to talk a little bit about the malpractice situation, the crisis, that's the word, the crisis that's going on in Maryland, where Governor Ehrlich is kind of being shunned by the doctors. He may not get good medical care if he goes to a hospital in Maryland. They might turn him away.
Well, I think this is interesting, the attempt to cap malpractice lawsuits, and it's really become part of the Republican agenda, I would say, in the last 5 to 10 years. It started in Texas and elsewhere, where they basically wanted to try to sell the idea that these high malpractice awards, or allegedly high malpractice awards, are what is driving up malpractice insurance for doctors and making it impossible for doctors to actually practice. It turned out to be a pretty good fundraising tool in Texas, where they were able to get the money from insurance industry folks and other folks who were going to benefit financially limiting these caps.
The point in Maryland is to tax the HMOs.
Well,
to help to pay for what you're saying happened in Texas.
Well, right, but the issue really is a structural problem with regards to the insurance companies, the way they invest their money and the way that they change their premiums to doctors based upon how.
But the question is it going to be straightened out anytime soon? Because doctors are talking about walking out. I mean, your pediatrician is saying, I don't want to be bothered with this mess. And the governor doesn't look like he's moving any with fast steps to correct the problem. Jim Pomeli?
Well, this is a really tough thing to do, because the problem is you don't want to deny financial resources to folks who have literally been damaged by malpractice. On the other hand, you don't want these court awards that are completely out of control for things that weren't malpractice. And what we've seen is juries are having a difficult time determining what is malpractice and what isn't. And they just decide, oh, we can't decide here, take all the money.
But Nicholas Sawock, didn't they, in the recommendations made last week out of the commission itself, one of the recommendations is to have a governing body to say what is malpractice or what should be a suit and what should not be a suit.
One of the reforms that has been, in my opinion, more successful than these caps, arbitrary caps on damages, is some sort of gatekeeper to get to court, either a third-party doctor who says this actually has enough malpractice to it to go to trial, mm-hmm. or a commission of doctors who say this looks like malpractice.
Right.
Because malpractice is tricky, and juries do have trouble sometimes with some of the technical aspects. Also, one of the things that makes for really large damage awards are these gatekeepers, because the small damage awards, those claims don't actually get to court. Only the really big, scary things
happen. Very quickly,
Eric.
You know, Jerry, one of the interesting things about this is that 50% of malpractice claims are filed against 5% of doctors. So it's a very small percentage of people who need to be more closely regulated by the industry that's there. I mean, they need to be drummed out of business if they're the source of these problems.
If you're just joining us, we are here with our first Sunday political debate. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System. Patrice McKinney, Democrat, along with Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Jim Pomeli, Republican, and Libertarian Nicholas Sawock. They're here, and this is our multi-partisan panel. Can we stick by that? Yes.
Can I follow up on what Eric said? Real quickly. If you look at legal malpractice versus medical malpractice, one of the big differences and why there are more medical malpractice suits is that lawyers through the Bar Association tend to disbar people who do something bad internally, whereas doctors, if you say a doctor in a hospital messed up, usually the administration of the hospital and their fellow doctors will rally around that doctor to prevent taking their license, to stonewall the patient who might have been hurt. And that failure to self-police is what leads to these large court awards.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. While we're in Maryland, folks, let me ask you this question. A big fight is getting ready to take place over the next year, and that is going to be the gubernatorial race in Maryland. Already we he names like Montgomery County Executive Doug Duncan and Baltimore Mayor Martin O'Malley. There are those who say that Martin O'Malley could swoop this thing big time, Patrice, mainly because he's nationally known, whereas Duncan is only known in the basically southern part of Maryland.
That's right. Duncan's been around for quite a long time, but he doesn't have the national presence, and I think that the state of Maryland is probably ready for somebody like O'Malley with that kind of national name recognition to take over the state.
You heard it here first, Jerry. Martin O'Malley will be the next governor of Maryland. But I think the issue is...
Are you sure about that?
I'm sure about that.
Do you have some kind of direct line or connection?
Well, there's already been polling, actually, that looked at...
I mean, you said the same thing about the president of the United States, you know, the presidential election.
I was a little off on the president.
That George Bush would not make it. You know, you said that.
Well, I said he would win the popular vote and lose the electoral
you
college.
You think our distinguished audience is going to listen to
the
things
you say
now?
They don't need to. They don't need to. But there has been polling out that's already looked at Martin O'Malley versus Ehrlich and Duncan versus Ehrlich. And O'Malley, even at this stage, is polling higher than Ehrlich.
But O'Malley runs Baltimore, which is still in a mess. Duncan runs Montgomery County, which seems to get rid of its mess. What about that Nicholas Sawock?
Well, as a Montgomery Countyan, I have to say, Duncan, I would say that Duncan hasn't really distinguished himself, and O'Malley has. Because Baltimore was such a mess, any improvement, and the improvements that O'Malley has made have been real, while there are still some problems left. Whereas Duncan, Montgomery County is a ship that kind of steers itself. The county council is very strong, and politically, honestly, Montgomery County, our problems aren't really that big.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, and the Verizon Wireless System lines open. If we have discussed something already and you wish to go back and take these our panelists back to what they made these statements of, you can certainly do it by giving us a call, 301-230-0980, pound 980, and the Verizon Wireless System. Nicholas Sawalk, would you please talk to our next listener?
Okay.
Pat in Alexandria.
Morning, Pat.
Good morning, darling. Jerry, I have been instructed to tell you Merry Christmas from Fallujah.
Ah,
and the weather report is 110 in the shade.
Oh, my goodness. Jeez.
I have to agree with Nicholas. Again, the doctors do not police themselves to the point that people are getting more malpractice insurance because people who are not qualified to practice are out there. And I have a friend who had this exact problem, and after the situation, found out the doctor had like 8 reprimands, I guess you call them, from the medical board. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally ridiculous, and it has to stop. And the other thing, knowing Bernie Kerik, they made a good move in Homeland Security.
Okay.
Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon.
I just want to respond to Pat's comment real quickly. Public Citizen has a website that actually has listings of doctors that have been had malpractice suits filed against them and, you know, successfully. So if you're concerned, you can go check that out on the web.
Okay. We've gotten into malpractice suits. We've gotten into Maryland's next hopefuls for governor. Ehrlich is on the run. And he's going to be running against some strong-headed Democrats who might, this might give him a run for his money. But I got to turn to you, Jim Pomeroy. In the state of Virginia, the only state in the nation where it lets its governor not serve more than 2 consecutive terms.
No, one term.
One term. What do you think about that? Should it be changed?
You know, I've heard the arguments on both sides. It's not really an issue I feel particularly strong about. I could see the rationale for letting him serve 2 consecutive terms. But, you know, 1 consecutive term hasn't necessarily been a bad thing either. I mean, it really is something I don't think is partisan. There are Republicans on both and Democrats on both sides.
But how much can you do in one term? That's what.
Oh, you can do a lot. I mean, there is the problem. Yeah. It's a very strong. It's a very strong. You know, a lot of power with the governor's office there. But the General Assembly has its prerogatives, and they don't want to have a governor serving multiple terms generally because that means less power for them.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that 2 consecutive terms for a governor is really an important thing, and I'm very much in favor of it. And I think that, for example, Mark Warner is doing a terrific job, and here we are, you know, faced with a re-election, once again. And
Governor Gilmer was doing a wonderful job too, and I would have loved to have seen.
I would have loved to have seen, and
Governor Allen too. These are all people
I would have loved to have seen serve multiple
terms. Right. I think Gilmer and Allen did wonderful jobs, and I think she obviously thinks Warner's doing a wonderful job.
Yeah,
so this is not a partisan issue. I think we all would like to see our favorite governors serve multiple terms. The question is structurally, is it good overall? Only one term or more than one term.
I agree it should be moved to 2 terms, but I just think that it's interesting to think about Virginia in terms of having the one-term governor. In Virginia, it seems like there's been a lot of short-term thinking, at least from an environmental angle. There really hasn't been a lot of thought to a long-term plan towards how are we going to, you know, help save the bay or help preserve our environmental assets. And I think that limiting people to one term gets them to think, you know, in terms of only that next election, not necessarily further down the line. And I think
one of the tragedies of a one-term governor is the car tax situation itself. I mean, you know, had to
well,
be turned around.
Well, that's not a tragedy of the governor. See, we want to look at the governor. We think that two terms is better. I think structurally it's good to have an executive that's limited to one term. The car tax is really a tragedy of the legislature, who aren't limited to one term and who do support it. And the legislature is the place you have to look to hold people accountable for making policy decisions that fail to have long-term thinking. The governorship in Virginia is structured to just be a chief executive that basically implements what the legislature wants done.
Well, Jim said that.
To do that, one term's good.
Let me say one thing about the car tax. Governor Gilmore, when he ran on a pledge to eliminate it in
he's
5...
He's the attorney general now?
Now he's in private practice, law practice. But he, Governor Gilmore ran, he pledged to end the car tax in 5 years, knowing that it would take 5 years to eliminate it. And unfortunately, that's 1 year longer than his term. But in his last budget, which went into Governor Warner's term, in his last budget, he zeroed it out. He zeroed it out as for cars over $20,000 a year, as
he
promised.
There was pressure for him to
Here's what happened. Once he did that, Governor Gilmore kept his promise. However, when Warner came in, all of a sudden these promises, and Governor Warner had promised to follow up and continue Governor Gilmore's car tax relief, and Governor Warner went back on his promise.
Like I said, if you're calling in and we're on to another topic, just ask the old topic and we'll get back to it. 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System here on Metro Talk, our first Sunday political debate roundtable. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeroy, along with Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and Green Party Eric Mickelson. Let's go to Eastern Shore, and Brian is on the line. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. I just want to briefly comment on Merrill Malley.
Uh-huh.
What a wonderful person.
Uh-huh.
What a great guy. He's done wonderful things for the city. And hey, the guy runs an Irish rock band. I mean. If he doesn't, I see him as being president someday. I mean, his physical presence on TV, you know, he looks smaller than he actually is. Man, he towers over me. And I just think he's a great guy.
Why are you living in Eastern Shore, then? Where do you live in Eastern Shore?
Ever hear of Easton?
Easton, of course.
Yes, and he's played at the Avalon. In fact, he's booked for March 19th. I've already checked it out.
So you're applying for the public relations job and the new governor?
Not really. I've met him. Yeah, I mean, he volunteers his time. He got rained out this year in Easton when we had a public service event.
Right.
But, I just think he's a great guy.
Hey, Brian, you're a great guy, too. And Eastern Shore is the most beautiful place in the world. Not one of the most beautiful places, I should say, during this holiday season.
Well, I have to agree, and I... You know, I say I'm from Easton, but I also live right on the Kent Narrows.
Hey, I definitely know. Good fishing country, buddy.
Oh,
take
it's
care.
Beautiful.
Have
okay,
a good day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
bye.
Brian. I have to confirm what this guy says. People who've met O'Malley in person say he's got a charisma that's on par with Bill Clinton's.
Right.
I mean, as far
that's
as
right.
really coming across.
Okay, so if you want to put him in charge of the pub crawl, that's fine. But this is the state of Maryland we're talking about, and I think we've got a great governor as it is.
What do you mean? In the state of Virginia?
No, I'm talking about, well, we're talking about Maryland now.
Oh, I see. You're talking about Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, talking about Maryland now. No, we're talking about, you know, he's talking about all the qualifications. And
well,
the qualifications here are he has a band. You know, and he's great. You know, he's very personable.
Well, what's wrong with that?
That's very nice. I'm sure I'd love to go listen to his band, but I don't want him running the state of Maryland.
I don't think he's intending to have a fire sale of public lands like Governor Ehrlich is, which may put him on a par.
Whoa.
As well as restricting First Amendment rights of free speech.
Oh, please.
Don't talk to that journalist.
The nattering nabobs of
moving
negativism.
Moving right along. Our telephone number is 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. If you want to get into this political mess, get on the line. I'll have lines open and give us your point of view. We certainly welcome it. David in Alexandria, good morning. Hello, David. David got lost. I guess he heard the rest of these.
We scared him.
Hello, David is there. David, we found you. Go ahead. Hello, David?
Yes.
Yes, good. I'm glad we found you. Go ahead, David.
Listen, I enjoy your show. I just want to let you know up front that I am a physician in Alexandria and have never been involved in any malpractice suits. And malpractice is a very relevant issue that affects my practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pressing issue for doctors who practice impeccably. And I think to belittle it as a problem that is brought upon by insurance companies investing or doctors who frequently do provide bad service is not really getting to the core of the issue.
And, you know, I'm glad you said that, David, because please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just a layman in this, but it seems that as though when we talk about health care across the country, what's happening in Maryland could escalate into other states. And,
yeah,
I mean, the malpractice thing is really big all over.
It is all over, and one of the things that's frustrating is the difference from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of physicians that are now choosing where they practice, not based on where they want to live, but where there's a friendly environment. So to think that, you know, access to care will always be available, in some ways it will be, but there will be and there have been quality physicians who have left areas to go to where they can actually practice without six-figure insurance premiums when they've never been named in a suit before.
Sure. Well, David, I wasn't belittling the problem at all. What I'm saying is that the way that it's being approached, I think, is an inaccurate way to deal with the problem. I think that there are structural problems leading to high premiums. And if you look at states where there are caps in place, that hasn't reduced the premiums for doctors. I mean, California's had caps in place for a long time. They haven't reduced the premiums. So I think that I'm not saying that there isn't a problem. I'm just saying that this way of reducing awards is not the way to solve the problem.
You know, I haven't looked at the figures recently, but I recall once upon a time looking at an equal position such as mine in California and for this area, which is the Northern Virginia, and it seemed that my rates were about double that I've got in California. So if that has changed in the last 2 years, that may be so, but it does seem to have some kind of an impact. And the American College of Surgeons, although they're obviously vested in the interest of physicians, strongly believe that that's one of the models that works because it has proven to lower the cost of insurance for their doctors.
And that's good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, David, and good luck to you.
Okay, gentlemen.
Okay, my friend. Baseball. Take me out to the ball game. Oh, my goodness gracious. Mayor Anthony Williams and Councilmember Jack Evans of Ward 2 in the District of Columbia, they've been running around the city just laughing and smiling because the vote was 6-4. What kind of political fallout in reality?
Okay, three abstentions, that's abdication. There are three council members who are not willing to step up to the plate and go, you know what, baseball doesn't get a free lunch on the taxpayers of D.C.'s dime. They're not willing to say no, but they're also not willing to say yes. I want somebody to hold those three accountable for their lack of leadership.
Well, that's not lack of leadership.
Linda Kropp is riding the fence and playing both sides.
My friend, that's not lack of leadership. They're smart. They're running for office. They don't want to.
They're not running for office.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Mendelsohn's up for office. Kathy Patterson's up for office.
Kropp?
And Linda Kropp. Yeah, all of them up for office.
When?
Naturally, next election. You know, we have elections
06?
In the District of Columbia.
06?
06, what is this? 05 coming up, yeah.
In the odd year.
So they're, regardless, odd or even, they're up for,
I don't care whether they're running for re-election. They still have a duty to the citizens to actually make a vote, not to say, well, no, I'm not even going to vote on this issue.
No,
this is an important issue for the citizens of the District of Columbia.
Me, they represent the citizens. And the citizens don't think it's not important. You go down to DuPont Circle and see those protests. Yes, sir, Eric.
Well, I think Nick makes a good point. I mean, did she take a straw poll and it came out 50-50 that, you know, she decided she wasn't going to take a position? I think it's a cop-out. And to say, well, they're running
What's
for
the
re-election.
Cop-out?
I think
to not vote.
You've been elected to place votes and vote one way or the other. And I don't care if you're going up for re-election again next time. You're not in the office for re-election.
But
you're in the office to represent.
This is why there should be one term.
Excuse me, you've had enough to say. They have another vote, though, guys. Come on. This is, as Adrian Washington of the Washington Times said this morning on NBC4's Reporter's Notebook. See how I plug things? She said, it's likely a done deal. There's no doubt about it. But these people, you know, they're politicians. They're not going to put their neck out on the line because somebody wants to hit a ball off third base. Jim Palmer, let me hear from you. You're a suburbanite.
What?
Do you want baseball in Washington where you don't have to pay for it?
Well, actually, the way the taxes are set up, a lot of the taxes are going to be paid by Virginians, and
how?
Inside the stadium.
Where have you guys ever paid anything
inside the stadium? Oh, look, you know, there's a list of things that the Virginians pay for in D.C. First of all, our federal income taxes go to D.C. The federal government gives a very large. D.C. gets payment from
this. Right now, they're going to Iraq. They're going to Iraq. Yes.
D.C. gets a very large payment every single year from every citizen in the United States.
Do you know the taxes that come out of D.C., too, that don't have a representation of all their taxes?
Oh, come on.
Well, if they can't vote, then they might as well not go to Congress either if they're just going to abdicate.
Guys. I like these people who don't live in D.C. can tell on people in D.C.
I'm a native Washingtonian.
You might be a native, but you're a traitor.
Oh.
not with us, you're against us.
Yeah. I think the stadium's a great idea. The business community is in favor. I think it'll be an economic development tool for D.C. You have some smaller businesses that are opposed to it because of the tax.
And the people.
That will be imposed upon them. But when the standard of living in D.C., when the economy improves, the people will be happy.
Where has that ever happened financed stadium?
Look at the Brookings Institution publications on the supposed economic growth created by these stadiums. In Baltimore, where it was supposed to be one of the most favorable situations because they had such a demand, basically drawing people from outside of the Baltimore region, it's raising like $2 million a year for the city. It's hardly anything. If they had that money invested in a CD, it would be better off.
All right, guys, the stadium, you can argue all you want, but the vote is made and it's going to go through. Let's go to another issue, and that is we got about 4 minutes. Am I right, Mr. Technical Producer? The fact is that this is the month when the year ends. What do you think has been the most significant?
Don't laugh at
Definitive statement. We have better writers, you know what I mean? This is the month that we have to think about what has been in our reflection. What is the greatest thing over the past year? Excluding elections.
George W. Bush.
No, excluding elections and presidents.
What?
Republicans, they want everything, don't they? Let's start with the Green Party. Mr. Minkle.
Oh, gosh.
Quickly.
So it's campaign election. Well, you know, I think in Maryland, the passage of the so-called flush tax, the flush fee to help reduce pollutants.
Libertarian, Nicholas Sawalk. Thank you very much. Let's go to the Democrat.
Well, we may not say it's elections, but the increased involvement of the American people in the political process has been a very positive thing this year, in spite of the outcome.
That's so nice. And now, here we go, guys. You ready? Republican Jim Pomeroy.
I would
exclude
if I'm excluded from talking about the president. I guess I'll have to say that our continuing push to win the war on terror. I think that is the most important thing that we've been doing this year.
The resignation of John Ashcroft was the best thing that happened over the last year.
Whew. Boy, I tell you, this is the political roundtable, ladies and gentlemen. First Sunday, we certainly want to thank our guests, none other than Eric Mickelson of the Green Party, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Republican Jim Pomeroy, and Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. We've had a good year on our political roundtable, really did. And I certainly want to thank each and every one of you guys for coming in every first Sunday and giving us a good perspective as to what's happening in our world of politics.
And thank you for putting it together.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks.
Have a good
one.
Happy holidays, guys. We're going to end with the music of Hanukkah as we take a look at the special day coming up, 8 days of the Festival of Lights to come. Don't forget next weekend, a very special breakfast forum having to do with teenage driving and young adult driving and drunken, and I should say alcohol, as well as the deaths we have on our highways. Join us next week. We'll be broadcasting from Capitol Hill at the Council of Government headquarters. Steve Solomon is our technical producer. Carolina Restrepo is our researcher. Shaheen, Public Affairs Assistant, written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is at WBIG 100.3 and at Sports Talk 980, Public Affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. My friend, much peace, much love to you. Make it a great season. Make it safe and make it careful. And also, happy Hanukkah.
And idols all around them, and just one jar of crude